for our broadcast here today. My thanks to our producer, Jackson Lunsford. This is Reed Magnum. One more time, your final score, Wisconsin 88 and UW-Milwaukee 45. All of us at the Badger Sports Network thank each of you for listening. This has been Wisconsin Basketball from Learfield.
Wisconsin women's basketball has been brought to you by Alliant Energy. Alliant Energy is powering beyond for you. And by UW Health Sports Medicine, treating the Badgers, treating you. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation of the Badger Sports Network.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. More people across the country are driving electric vehicles, but Wisconsin lags behind. EVs only make up about 1% of all cars on our roads. Here's Judith Ruiz Branch.
Misconceptions about cost, maintenance, and performance are top of mind for hesitant buyers. But in Wisconsin, where about 30% of the state's population is rural, accessibility is one of the biggest concerns. Jeremiah Brockman with the Wisconsin Electric Vehicle Association thinks it's only partly because rural areas in general are slower to catch on to some trends. He says some areas still don't have enough charging stations.
Part of the problem, too, is you have more farmland in rural areas, and if you spend the entire day out on a farm and you're driving around your, you know, many acres of land, you worry about where you're going to charge your vehicle at that point. And I think that's another hurdle.
Compared to neighboring states, Wisconsin has significantly fewer charging stations. In an effort to help bolster the state's EV infrastructure, Wisconsin passed a law earlier this year to install a network of 65 fast charging stations statewide. The plan is to install them every 50 miles along the interstate system and major highways through next year. Even though the law was Republican-authored in Wisconsin, Brockman says he believes the political divide is another factor in EV ownership hesitation.
Honestly, you know, this is part of a larger national conversation where electric vehicles are kind of being politicized. And, you know, I like to say the benefits are there. It doesn't matter who you voted for last Tuesday. The benefits are there no matter what.
Those benefits include lower fuel and maintenance costs, lower emissions, and potential tax breaks. For Public News Service, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tome Olson.
This is your hometown radio, Refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Any morning clouds giving way to sunshine with highs in the mid-50s and west winds just a bit on the breezy side. Tonight, mostly clear skies, lows in the upper 20s. More clouds on the way for Monday. High temperatures warming to the mid-50s, some showers developing.
Right now, it's 51.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time as we'll be joined by President of the Union, Reed Galen, also a founder of the Lincoln Project. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2. News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin. For all of Wisconsin. Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Kicking off this week's Spotlight, we'll hear from Matt Nair on air. And this week, Jane and Greg welcomed in Jim Santel, host of Amicus, a Law Review, to speak about the people Donald Trump has been nominating for cabinet positions, and in particular, Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz.
Good morning and welcome to Matt Nair on Air, Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, and Calvin Butenhoff, coming to you live from our studio at Radio Park here in Racine. You can always join us, call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and the platform that used to be Twitter. Coming up at 11:33, we'll talk all things sports with Journal Sentinel sports guru J.R. Radcliffe. And we will wrap up the show as we do every day now with This Shouldn't Be a Thing, the Cindy Lou Who edition. If you ever have a thing which should not be, send it in to Greg and me at janesays@civicmedia.us, J-A-N-E-S-A-Y-S. Jane says at civicmedia.us. Delighted to have him joining us here in studio. He is the host of Amicus, a Law Review across Civic Media on Saturdays from 9 until 11. Former U.S. attorney and actual attorney, Jim Santel is here. Good morning, Jim. How are you?
Jane, delighted to be with you and Greg once again. Sometimes I wonder if I'm a real attorney, but I think most days at least I play one out there somewhere. Glad to be with you. Delighted, honored.
Appreciate it. You can provide some much-needed perspective, I think, with some of the cabinet appointees that are being tossed around by Donald Trump. And we were talking last half hour about Matt Gaetz.
Matt Gaetz. Talk about things that shouldn't be a thing, right? But very seriously.
I had someone suggest that we should do Matt Gaetz should not be a thing for the rest
exactly,
of the week.
Exactly. We talk a lot about speaking these days in hyperbole, and yet that's appropriate, right? It may well be that this nomination, let me step back and say, from my perspective, it's not hyperbole to say that this nomination is the worst one in all of Department of Justice history. To the Department of Justice, the Attorney General, the Chief Federal Law Enforcement Officer for the United States of America. And if things go as Donald Trump wants them to go, we'll see. We'll talk about recess appointments, I suspect. But if things go as he hopes they will go, this man will be in charge of the United States Department of Justice in areas of antitrust, tax, environment, civil rights, national security, all those kinds of things that invade and are a part of our lives on a regular basis. He will be in charge of that. This man himself, of course, the subject until very recently, as all of your listeners know, of an FBI investigation, of a Department of Justice investigation, whether he was engaged in human trafficking involving a 17-year-old girl. And the case did not result in an indictment against him, principally because the witness herself was not a compelling witness. Not that this did not happen, but just because the case could not be put together beyond a reasonable doubt for a jury. And we now have Matt Gaetz arguably entering Ninth and Constitution As our chief federal law enforcement officer, it is beyond words. And I don't know what the future will bring for the department, but I think both people inside and outside the department should be much, much afraid.
Well, and just remember that President Biden was accused of weaponizing the Justice Department. He allowed the Justice Department to prosecute his son.
Absolutely. And has said more recently, Jane, as you've also, and Greg, also talked on this very broadcast, when asked, are you going to pardon, are you going to exercise the authority that you've got, Mr. President, under the Constitution and pardon your son? And he said, no, there was no more explanation. I'm not doing that. We've got a president, again, in cahoots, regard, presumably with an attorney general here, who would not only pardon anybody, will pardon about 1,200 people who assaulted our Capitol, attempted to undermine our elective process here. And again, Matt Gaetz, to go back to your commentary about what Donald Trump promised retribution.
Yes.
This is the face of retribution, and it comes from his own personal experience. He will say, I was a victim. I was a victim of the weaponization of the Department of Justice because this investigation was pursued against me, and now it's payback time. Matt Gaetz is the embodiment of Donald Trump's promise for retribution, and he can do it at the Department of Justice.
You know, something I was thinking about were all those individuals who are in prison, too. Prison reshapes your mind.
Yes.
They're going to be going through some stuff. And regardless of what they have done, if they walk out of prison tomorrow just because, not for storming the Capitol, but for some other crime, they're going to come out more emboldened, with
Absolutely.
More fervor, more vigor. They're going to have T-shirts and sweatshirts. I mean, they're going to celebrate this. They're going to be seen as heroes. They're going to be called patriots because that's what the president-elect has called them. And something I wanted to bring up, what you both just mentioned, was recess appointments. If I'm not mistaken, Jim, you mentioned that the Supreme Court has said in the past you shouldn't do these.
Right.
But now we're faced with a Supreme Court that's a 6-3 majority in favor of Donald Trump, not the GOP. Right. Donald Trump,
and not the Constitution either.
Right. Exactly. Decided to amend the Constitution and say, you know what? Turns out that presidents, maybe for 238 years, but at least for the last 6 months, have immunities across the board. Mm-hmm. You can commit crimes in office. And there's nothing that anybody can do about it. That's the Supreme Court that would, again, be very much inclined. You're absolutely right, Greg. Frankly, during the Obama administration, Steve Breyer wrote an opinion and said, you know what? We don't like this idea of recess appointments. It had to do with whether or not the Senate could kind of gavel in and gavel out to prevent the president from doing that. Prior to that, frankly, the presidents had routinely done this. George W. Bush did it, and Bill Clinton did it, and Barack Obama did it. Supreme Court said, we don't like this practice. And you know what? Donald Trump didn't do it, and Joe Biden didn't do it because the Supreme Court had said no. Now Donald Trump has said, recess appointments, Senate, you go away for a couple of weeks, and I'm going to get all these people in place. The way that this works, of course, for the Constitution, it's not indefinite, but it's for the rest of the term of the Congress until the end of the second session of the 119th Congress coming in, which basically means about 2 years. And that's enough time to do a lot of damage in all sorts of agencies, including justice, but also State Department, Labor Department, all of them out there, agriculture, you name them, commerce and so forth. And that's what he's planning to do. But it's a combination that is just nearly unbelievable. But the fact that it is true.
Well, and that just goes to show that, like, it's going to heavily gut those departments, if not shut them down. I mean, see people on Twitter all the time saying any department with three letters gets shut down. I'm like, do you know what any of these departments
do?
You don't. Of course you don't. In fact, if I said, what does CIA mean? You probably don't know what that acronym is for. But this is just all walking it towards the ultimate goal of Project 2025. I mentioned in the previous hour that we got a lot of pushback from individuals saying you're overreacting, hyperbole.
This isn't going to happen.
I don't know anything about this. What are you even talking? My friends don't know anything about this. What are you even talking about? It took less than a week for Project 2025 to take hold and to start. And that began with the appointment of these ridiculous human beings with little to no experience to important positions of power that have a global ripple.
Absolutely. This is massive. This would be massive. I just want to reintroduce you. Jim Santel is our guest. He's a former U.S. attorney and also our colleague here at Civic Media. Catch his show every Saturday from 9 to 11, Amicus, a law review. And if you ever have questions, Jim is a brilliant, brilliant lawyer.
So we'll always bring snacks.
I do bring snacks.
He brings great snacks.
Right.
We're talking about Matt Gaetz being presented as the potential head of the attorney general.
It's almost difficult to say out loud, isn't it, Shane?
It is for me, right?
Right.
I am seeing a little bit of pushback this morning from some Republican senators.
Right.
John Cornyn, which I did not expect. He's like, we want this ethics committee report to be released.
Right, right.
And because Gaetz resigned from Congress yesterday, that kind of has killed the investigation.
It has, exactly. And please tell me, America, in history, that the incoming president of the United States of America did not appoint or plan to appoint an attorney general to get him out from under an ethics investigation. That's not the reason we're doing this. Please tell me that that's the case. But boy, the timing sure looks like that, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
Right? And beyond it, to your good point, both of you making this point, I'm not expecting that everybody understands and appreciates the structure of the Department of Justice. I can recite it because I worked there for 30 years, and it's wonky, and it's kind of down the rabbit hole, and it's the kind of thing that people roll their eyes at when I begin to talk about it. But the reality is there does need to be some appreciation fundamentally for, number one, what a president does. Very concerned about whether or not half the population really appreciates that, right, Greg and Jane?
Yeah.
Secondarily, as we think about Matt Gaetz, what does an attorney general do? How many people in America can talk about that intelligently? I can tell you a lot of what he or she does. I worked for Janet Reno directly. I worked under Eric Holder. And they have tremendous responsibilities for defining who we are in America in all those areas. Again, civil rights, the environment, even things like tax and corporate areas, all kinds of things, national security and how we investigate cases, the number of agencies. The FBI is an agency inside the Department of Justice, as is the DEA and ATF, all these agencies out there that investigate all of those, supervised and directed by, ultimately, the attorney general. That's no small power. And I wonder out loud if Americans appreciate the catastrophe that this could be if this man is put in charge of that.
And the potential corruption.
Yes.
The potential corruption is so massive, it's almost hard to wrap your brain around.
Well, and exactly. This is the attorney general. The president is also going to appoint a deputy attorney general, an associate attorney general, and about 15 different assistant attorneys general. And yes, indeed, my successor, if you removed 92, 93 United States attorneys around the country. Will you find people who are loyalists who will take those positions? Regrettably, you will. They'll take the oath of office to affirm the Constitution.
Right.
But they'll also be asked during the course of their interviews, how loyal are you to the plans that Donald Trump has? If that's okay, we will get your nomination up to the Senate, or maybe not. Maybe we'll do it on recess. But even if we do, we've got a Senate that will now confirm virtually anybody. Maybe this is a bridge too far. Maybe Matt Gaetz is a bridge too far.
Well,
but others probably not.
Yeah, definitely. And let's not forget that, at least though, the word is that the reason that Kevin McCarthy was ousted as speaker is because he knew this ethics investigation was going on into Gaetz and he wouldn't stop it.
Yes, yes, right.
And therefore Gaetz retaliated and got rid of Kevin
McCarthy.
Talk
about retribution, right?
Exactly.
There's the R word once again, Jane.
Exactly. We're going to break. We'll be right back. We are talking with Jim Santel, host of Amicus, a law review. Stay close. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Matt Nair on Air is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday mornings from 10 till noon. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. This is News from the Center, WRCE. Earl Ingram.
Dunge from Milwaukee.
I enjoy your show right now at a time like this. You are great therapy for me. I don't know what I'd do without you guys.
We enjoy you as well. That's the importance of civic media and this platform. And Sandy and I take this seriously. We're going to continue to do whatever it is we can to make sure that people like you continue to get your voices heard.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local civic media radio station and on the app. The Todd Alma Show.
Managing editor of E-Bombs World, Mr. Peter Rapine.
Google this week released a new product, the new AI Overview. If you Google search, can I use gasoline to cook spaghetti? Google says, no, you can't use it to cook spaghetti, but you can use gasoline to make spicy spaghetti dishes.
Not recommended. Do not do that.
The Todd Alma Show, weekdays noon till 2 on your local civic media radio station and on the app. You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Next up on the Civic Media Spotlight, we'll hear from the Todd Alba Show. And this week, it's a real treat. Civic Media CEO Sage Weil made a rare on-air appearance to commemorate the second anniversary of the Todd Alba Show. He and Todd also discussed the great strides the company has made over the last few years and what Sage's vision for the future now looks like.
Welcome back to the Todd Alba Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. 21 now past the hour of 1 o'clock on this Thursday, November 14th, 2024. The two-year anniversary show. Many thanks to Matt Flynn, our ongoing contributor and friend, for his takes on things. Always great to have a perspective from him. And making a rare appearance on the air is his annual appearance here on the show. Our founder and CEO, owner of Civic Media, Sage Weil. Thanks, Sage, for coming on our two-year show.
Glad to be here. How you doing, Todd?
I am fantastic. It's always great when you were on last year, and I cannot believe here we are a year later.
Has it been a year? I think I've been on.
Well, under different circumstances, but happy. Okay. These are happier circumstances. Yes. You understand?
Yes. Well, it's good to be here.
Well, first of all, it's great to have you here. We had a listener early on the show today that said, based on the election results, and there's a lot of takes out there. I know you're still going through your analysis of everything, but one of the things I think is emerging is that digital alternative media, good news sources, or a lack thereof, played a part in the results of this election. So someone asked, is there a chance, have you had inquiries of spreading civic media beyond Wisconsin, and could this be replicated in other states?
That's a multi-part question. So I guess the short answer is yes. Have had lots of conversations about replicating the civic media model in other places over the past year and a half. I haven't in the last week. I gave everyone a break over the weekend, and I haven't had that many conversations yet this week. Mm. But that is certainly always on my mind. But it's not. The first thing, I think the first thing is making sure that we are firing on all cylinders and being as successful as possible here in Wisconsin. And so that remains my primary focus.
And again, I mean, what's your take? I mean, you came from the digital IT world before you got into media. What's your take as just an observer of politics now, but also media? Mm-hmm. What's your take on, was there a real role to play, whether it was Barstool Sports or Joe Rogan, on these digital platforms? Do you, in your opinion, did it really make a real difference in the outcome of this election?
Yes.
Yes. That's the short answer.
I think my hot take for the election is it's the media. Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting if you look at the performance of the Harris campaign in all the swing states. Nationwide, there was a shift to the right, but in the swing states where the Harris campaign and the Trump campaign were competing, there was still a shift to the right, but it was not as far. So when the campaigns were actually competing head-to-head, the Harris campaign did better. And from what I've read, like, that's really because Trump really didn't have a ground game. Mm-hmm. There was the people that I've talked to who are on the ground in Pennsylvania in rural areas. Like, they literally didn't see a canvasser ever.
Wow.
That was on the Trump campaign. But I think the big takeaway for me from all this is that in the old world, campaigns would spend $1 billion on TV ads and a little bit of radio ads around the edges, right? That no longer is enough. In every state in the country, Harris outspent Trump. And in every state of the country, there was still a shift to the right. And that's been sort of a structural problem for Democrats for more than a decade, where it's there have been diminishing returns on paid political advertising. And I think this is sort of, I don't know if it's the first time, but it's the first time in recent memory where it's like, it just hasn't been enough, despite an overwhelming, not an overwhelming, but a significant advantage on the fundraising side. So I think probably like most of our listeners, hopefully that translates into maybe we won't see so many political ads and we won't be like inundated with like barrage here in Wisconsin. Like living in a swing state is the worst, right? You have like outside political voting power, but there is a steep price to pay for that.
Yeah. And fact that Wisconsin is the closest state of everybody probably means that we will be ground zero once again in 4 years.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Wisconsin was an outlier, right? And I'm sure you've talked about this already, but nationally, there were fewer votes cast for Trump this year than in 2020, and even fewer votes cast for Harris than for Biden in 2020. That is not the case in Wisconsin. Turnout was up. The number one vote getter of vote all time in a presidential race was Trump. The second was Harris. The third was Biden in 2020. Yeah. And after that, I think it's Obama and whatever, 08 or something. I forget. But
yeah.
So something different happened in Wisconsin. People were more engaged. They turned out in a way that they didn't in other parts of the country. And so I think that's, I'd like to say that civic media had something to do with it, but certainly we can't claim all the credit. I think Ben Wickler was an amazing organizer here in Wisconsin. It'll be interesting to see what happens there.
And Trigvi Olsen, who comes on our show, has been part of presidential campaigns, has a great deal of respect for Ben Wickler and what he's done here. And that means a lot more to me than my opinion, because Trigvi's done national politics, and I haven't.
Yeah.
Looking ahead, talking to Sage Weil, CEO and owner of Civic Media, looking ahead, Sage, to 2025, I've said this before on the air, said it last year when we were in this position for our one-year anniversary. The reason I came here and am so grateful for it, and thank you again for this opportunity, is because you said my main North Star directive was to tell the truth and do it with integrity. And one of the great things I love about it is you have me, a former Republican, you have Mark Becker, a former Republican, you have Scott Klug, still a Republican, a former Republican congressman, and then you also have people on our network that are more left of center. And I think to me, it's the difference of and unique voices that bring people in rather than just saying, oh, we're going to recreate Air America and be a mouthpiece for the Democratic Party.
Yes. Yes. Well, I mean, there are many things that Air America did wrong, but certainly that's not the model we want to.
Yes.
Absolutely. I think I never want to be a shill for any political party, because I think that there are two fundamental problems that we need to fix in this country. One is that we have a two-party duopoly, and in every election you have two choices, and every issue somehow has to get coded into one of those two boxes. Mm. That's a recipe for just poor choices and poor outcomes. And it also is a recipe for polarization and, you know, us versus them and all those things that if you just code people into two camps, that's no good. And the second one is the economic reality, where we are living in an age where we have the highest level of wealth and income disparity in the history of the world. And people were understandably frustrated with the cost of living, and it's not surprising that they said something different.
Tom, listening to WAUK, says civic media made a huge positive difference in this past spring Supreme Court race. Sage Weil, thanks for this opportunity. Happy anniversary to you, our 2 year show. Thanks for coming on.
Congratulations. Thank you.
My pleasure. Back after this on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Todd Alba Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from noon till 2. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. News from the Center, WRCE.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. President Biden has authorized Ukraine to use long-range missiles deep inside Russia, something that the president had specifically prohibited until now. The U.S. had previously provided Ukraine with shorter-range missiles equipped with cluster munitions that could only be used on Ukrainian territory seized by Russia. In a new book, Pope Francis says the Vatican News Portal, calling for an investigation to determine whether Israel's actions in Gaza constitute genocide. Meanwhile, today,
at least 50 Palestinians killed in northern Gaza. As the Israeli army continues the ground offensive against Hamas, it launched more than a month ago. The IDF failing to address questions on the targets of these strikes and why so many civilians were killed.
ABC's Jordana Miller in Jerusalem. Donald Trump's nominee for Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth reportedly paid a settlement to a woman who accused him of sexual assault in 2017. That according to his attorney, who insists the allegations are false. This is ABC News.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Badgers lose to Oregon. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. College football, Wisconsin battled, but lost to number one ranked Oregon 16-13. A 19-yard gain on third down in the fourth quarter was called back when a Badgers offensive lineman was charged with a chop block. A replay later on NBC showed it was a bad call. Head coach Luke Fickell.
I guess I don't know the definition of a chop block. It usually means you got to leave your feet in order to hit somebody low. But when you hit them in the waist, it doesn't seem to be a chop block. But nonetheless, you know, hey, you've got to find ways to overcome things, and we weren't able to do that tonight.
The Badgers have now lost three in a row. NBA, the Bucks losing to the Hornets 115-114. Giannis Antetokounmpo called for a foul in the final seconds, and after the game, the referees admitting there was no contact. Giannis asked for his reaction.
Now, I've been in the league, this is my 12th year. Rule number one, don't give away your money. And rule number two, don't forget rule number one. So I'm not going to comment on that.
The Bucks host the Rockets tomorrow night with Sports on Mike Clemens.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, clear skies, low 30s. Rain is likely for Monday, becoming breezy out of the east, highs near 53. Rain and windy for Monday night, lows around 50. For Tuesday, mostly cloudy, chance of rain in the morning, high of 59. 35 the low Tuesday night.
It's 51 at our studios.
Memorial Day weekend is around the corner and the weather is perfect for planting. Whether it's tomatoes or cucumbers, petunias or cosmos, you'll find an outstanding selection of vegetable plants and flowers at the Winter Greenhouse. Join many enthusiastic gardeners and get prepared for an inspiring summer by visiting Winter Greenhouse. Visit this Memorial weekend, open 7 days a week from 8:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. 2 miles north of Winter off County Highway W.
Go Badgers, go Packers, go to McFarland's. Sorry, I got on a roll. But if you want to put points on the board, it's hard to go wrong when you pass, kick, or just run into McFarland's. With tires, hardware, egg machinery, and power equipment sales, parts, and service, chainsaws, snow blowers, RTVs, as well as rental equipment for projects and parties, well, it's a no-brainer touchdown to shop here at McFarland's, 780 Carolina Street, one block south of Highway 12 in Sauk City.
Bailey Paint and Decorating reminds you that the perfect color should be enjoyed for years to come. Extraordinarily durable Benjamin Moore paint and exterior stain ensure exactly that. Bailey Paint and Benjamin Moore know that getting the right product is the secret of success. Bailey Paint and Decorating ensures you have the right color and products and offers the best paint you can buy in Benjamin Moore paint products. Bailey Paint and Decorating, Court Street, downtown Richland Center, your Benjamin Moore headquarters.
Whenever you're in southwest Wisconsin, you're never far from someone who trusts BL Signs. From the van with a sleek wrap you're meeting, to the business sign that welcomes you before you step out of the car, or the restaurant sign that makes your mouth water, BL Signs is behind it all. With a reputation for delivering projects on time, on budget, and with the highest quality, BL Signs of Richland Center is your go-to for all things signage. Visit them online today at blsignage.com.
Hear your favorite Wisconsin Badger sports broadcast right here on WRCE.
Dom Selvia.
Next time, John Nichols from The Nation and the Cap Times. We'll talk about John Thune, the Senate Majority Leader, and his relationship to Trump. Plus, Jesse Waters says RFK Jr. is going to make it sexy like the 90s. Tune in.
The Dom Selvia Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to this week's Civic Media Spotlight. Up next, we'll hear from the Dom Selvia Show. Dom welcomed in Jody Habesh-Sinikin, Senator-elect of Wisconsin's 8th Senate District. They discuss her plans to address the needs of Wisconsinites and also what the state legislature will be able to accomplish after flipping several of its seats.
And welcome back to the Dom Selvia Show. Thank you so much for listening. Jazzed as hell to introduce to you right now, Wisconsin State Senator-elect Jody Habesh-Sinikin. Congratulations on a bright spot in an otherwise bleak day. Jody, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
It is our pleasure to have you. New maps here in Wisconsin's 8th Senate District. Now, unfortunately, I moved away from the district this election cycle, Jody, so I couldn't vote for you this time. But new maps seemingly have helped. But you've labeled yourself, Jody, as a consensus builder as well. What do you think put you over the top here?
It really was that message. Our ground game and all the thousands of doors, the meet and greets, the phone calls, the tens of thousands of postcards. It was an enormous community effort with solidarity such like I've never experienced before. That really is what got us there. As I'm sure you're aware, the communities in this district were the only ones in the country, really, of the few who avoided that red wave. Washington County, Waukesha County, the portions in Senate District 8 really held strong and actually moved bluer.
Jody, you're still going to be in the minority in the state Senate, hell, even in the legislature as well, as not every, you know, all the senators were not up for election this cycle, and we'll still move, have elections in 2 years again. What would you like to see done? What do you think is important to produce and to do in order to fulfill your obligations, your promises, and what you think your constituents want?
Absolutely. What we want is progress. We want to move Wisconsin forward, get past all this partisan divisiveness and the take-no-prisoners approach, and start making the necessary improvements and investments in our local communities, in our education system, K-12 up through the university level, codify Roe v. Wade, and secure women's reproductive health for doctors and for families in Wisconsin. There are so many issues that we need to make progress on that have been held hostage for the last 10-plus years under the gerrymander.
And we'll have to continue to fight for those changes and moving forward. Jody Habesh-Sinikin, Wisconsin's 8th Senate District-elect. Jody, there's been a lot of reflection here since the election last week. What's your experience? You've run before and you were not successful, and you keep trying, you keep fighting, you keep going, and you pulled it out this time. What lessons do you think you can that you learned might be applicable to everyone's, you know, reevaluating and looking back at what happened in this election cycle?
My experience the first time around, as you are well aware, was under the old maps. There is a 12-point disadvantage to any Democrat running in then Senate District 8. Under the new maps, that was cut in half. So we still had about a 6-7 point disadvantage, but we were able to overcome it again by really speaking to folks about the value of legislators in Madison working across the aisle with one another, which has long been Wisconsin's tradition as a purple state. I think that that message of putting down a bit of the partisan camps that we've all separated ourselves in to really try to understand each other, what it is that we need in our communities, in our nation, and try to figure out a path forward. That seems to be what has been missing a bit, and I hope that we can heal and make some progress at the national level too.
Jody Habesh-Sinikin, Wisconsin State Senator-elect for the 8th Senate District here in the state of Wisconsin. some of the criticism on the national level, Jody, has been as a party that perhaps the Democratic Party has not supported, not gone after and tried to woo the working class of this country. Obviously, you pulled this out. What's your assessment of that critique?
In my meetings, I've met with so many unions and folks concerned about labor and people across this district, which includes many, many working people in Butler, in Lannan, Menominee Falls, Port Washington, you name it. I am talking to those people. And I think that there has been a lot done in recent years with the infrastructure deal and others to create opportunities. The apprenticeship programs are phenomenal. I find them so inspiring in ways that we can help our young people move into good careers and good lives for their families of the future. So I think that some of it is a communication problem,
yeah,
that they haven't been able to express all the good that has been done and is going to continue. So that is really what I have experienced in our district, that we are doing very important things. And talk comes cheap. It's easy to say things and to make promises. But I think people should really look to see what has actually been done to help families.
Jody, you know, and again, congratulations. I love the fact that you've continued to fight. And with these new maps, you were able to pull it out. And a lot of the reaction that I've seen and for success for governance is state and local government. I mean, if you want to make changes on the ground where you're at, you have to get involved on the local level. And we're always going to have to deal with a national issue, let's call it. But when it comes down to the state and local level, it becomes, you know, very hands-on, very personable, very face-to-face. Overcoming the communication I don't think it's communication, perhaps. If there's a difference in understanding of what the facts may be, as you mentioned, the Infrastructure Act and some of these efforts that were put forth and actually passed under the Biden administration, some folks didn't think it did anything for them. And some folks, when you talk about, well, you know, these tariffs could increase costs if proposed by the Trump administration, could actually increase costs and increase inflation. Some folks really don't hear that. How do you successfully breach that? Because people get very sensitive if they're not aware of a particular fact or in this environment. And I've had personal conversations with friends that have been really defensive about their position if I bring, you know, other facts and new facts to light. And when we deal on a personal level, on a state and local level, what's the best way, do you think it is, to approach, you know, perhaps a difference in not just opinion, but in what we would perceive as facts with those that may not be aware or don't agree with it?
Yeah, I think it's very much what you're saying is the conversation. First, having a conversation at all these many, many countless stores, I always would start with what's top of mind for you and try to understand what it is, where the concern lies, whether it is with healthcare, whether it is with taxes, whether it is with inflation, whether it is with community safety concerns, education, and start there and try to get an understanding of what is really bothering them and try to offer solutions on where there can be progress. For example, in the Senate District 8 communities, there is these ongoing school referenda that have come up year after year after year in certain communities. And that's simply a consequence of there not being sufficient funding, notwithstanding the progress in shared revenues under Act 12. More needs to be done at the local level for more autonomy and more funding so that communities are not forced to have to raise their property taxes on themselves just to guarantee appropriate services and education for their children. That is money out of their pocket. Those increased costs at the local level just means that there's less money to pay for groceries, to pay for other life expenses. So I try to explain what we can do at the state level or at the local level We sure as heck can't take on national price gouging by these corporations at the local level, but we can do things that keep more money in people's pockets here in Wisconsin, and of course, make those necessary investments in our schools and in our communities so that we can have the best possible lives for our families.
Jody, I always thought, you know, when the politicians say, all, you know, first they're all about local control and then they're not about local control. Then they are about local control. So I guess it depends on what the circumstances are. But no one wants to raise taxes. No one wants to be no elected official wants to come in and say, I'm going to raise your taxes because we need to do X, Y, or Z. I thought in some regards, the politicians that voted for this were wimping out to the degree that now they don't have to make those hard, quote unquote, decisions. They're just going to let, you know, the referendum, and everyone's going to do their own referendum and let them raise taxes on themselves. And so now, you know, the politicians, they're not the bad guys, bad girls. You know what I'm saying? How much of that plays into it? That people just, the politicians, the lawmakers just don't want to have to be the ones to say, we're raising your taxes.
Yeah, I think it's even more than that, given the gerrymander. We have a $4 billion plus surplus, as in billion. We have opportunity to make necessary investments in those matters like childcare, like our schools, like our universities, etc. But it has been held hostage by this legislature, particularly by the Joint Finance Committee, where my opponent, Dewey Strobel, was a co-chair. There has been this partisan war to hold back the release of funding that we could go forward on. For example, the literacy bill that he touted time and again on the radio and in literature that the legislature approved and the governor signed off on $50 million to go into the schools for literacy coaches, curriculum, et cetera. But the Joint Finance Committee has held on to over $49.5 million of that 50. Same with PFAS remediation, same with the money due the Western Wisconsin hospitals, on and on. We have the money available to help families in Wisconsin and to lower costs and to help them. But it has been held hostage by these partisan wars.
Jody Habesh, Senekin, Wisconsin State Senator-elect for Wisconsin's 8th Senate District. Just a few more minutes, Jody. On the education, the vouchers and school choice and those kinds of issues, it seems to me that we have basically two parallel, and one of them an unfunded, school systems. Now, I was a product of private school, at least high school. My parents made that decision to pull me out of a public school and put me into private school and went to Pocket to go do that. What's your sense on the seemingly massive growth over the last 20 years on school choice and school vouchers and so on? And is there some sort of unwinding or something that we can do to at least mitigate the continued growth? How do you see these two different parallel but different school issues proceeding in the next 6 years?
It's an excellent question. I, too, have been observing that growth. And what we basically are having now in Wisconsin is two separate school systems that require funding. And that is not sustainable. So what we need to make sure that we're taking care of is holding these school systems to similar standards of accountability and transparency. And particularly when it comes to special education funding, there needs to be comparable standards so that the public school system isn't unfairly burdened with special education needs that is paid at such a disparate rate than the voucher schools, which places enormous burdens and a disadvantage on our public school system. So there just needs to be a really good and careful look at this, because everyone, I think, can agree that we need an excellent education system for our children, for Wisconsin's future, for our economy. And there is so much dysfunction out there and lack of accountability that I'm very much hopeful that we're going to make some progress on this and address the concerns that you just raised.
Jody Habesh Senekin, Wisconsin State Senator-elect for Wisconsin's 8th Senate District. Congratulations on your victory. The 8th Senate District is very lucky to have someone like you representing them. We look forward to you serving your seat and hope you come around a lot here in the future. Thank you so much, Jody.
Thank you, Dom. I appreciate it. And thanks, Jess.
Always.
Appreciate you.
Folks, this is the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842. Going to come back with some of your calls, 855-75-CIVIC.
The Dom Salvia Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from 4 till 6. To learn more about this show and all the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. This is News from the Center, WRCE.
It's the sound of a soda, considered one of the coolest things made in Wisconsin. Jolly Good has been around since the 1960s. Cryer Foods makes it in Random Lake, which is in Sheboygan County. But Cryer started as a canning company in 1913. What was being canned there? Sauerkraut? Peas? Beets? The answer coming up.
At Jolly Good, we believe in quality.
Soda turned into an important revenue stream when production at the canning company slowed in the colder months. So what was being canned there? Sauerkraut? Peas? Beets? All three, plus juice, soups, and more. By the 1960s, Cryer quit canning and went all in on Jolly Good soda.
For flavor and value, Jolly Good's got it.
The latest resurgence of Jolly Good makes it a slice of Wisconsin for yesterday and today. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
We've got a segment from the Earl Ingram Show to wrap up hour one of the Civic Media Spotlight. Earl welcomed Dr. Omar onto the show for his segment Into the Pharmacy to talk about stress management now that election season is over.
All right, welcome back to In the Pharmacy with Dr. Omar, the pharmacist, on the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. The conversation, the discussion today, you know, is right now we're dealing with stress. And I asked right before the break, how to live a long and fulfilling life as one ages. Managing stress is part of that regime. Is it safe to say that, doctor?
It's a big part of it. So I like to just kind of visualize the situation. I start with picking up the question of I have problems sleeping, and then I see that stress levels are very high. So I start from better sleep. If you did everything you can to sleep better, then, and you also took melatonin, which you can find over the counter, you can ask the pharmacist about L-theanine products, adaptogens to help you to sleep. And the nice thing about these herbs also that I use it in other products to support. So the supplement would have something like L-theanine, would have another calming molecule called the GABA. So I put them together in a supplement that's taken as a squirt of liquid in the mouth before going to sleep. And the GABA and L-theanine, they help to switch off the brain, relax, and sleep. So there's the vast majority of tools in our toolbox when it comes to functional medicine and compounding different things. You come with a question and then maybe I give you a recommendation or maybe I do some testing. Because as I told you earlier, when you wake up in the morning, it's expected your cortisol levels will be the highest. So the lion can chase you and you can run from the lion, do what you have to do through the day. And then it's a day kind of, you know, calms down. Many people don't have that. Many people would have low cortisol because for years they have been pushing. So we give adaptogens that are excitatory in the morning that push them to produce more cortisol, and we give them the adrenal gland itself to help them with energy in the morning, and then we help them in the evening to get calming. We talked several weeks ago about breathing exercise, better food, eating breakfast, supporting the body with nutrients we need, and then we look at the herbs that we need, like calming herbs, or sometimes we need things to give us more energy. And my recommendation is not to jump on something that comes in the ads to buy right away, because some of those herbs are not suitable for you to use in your, if you're tired, you can't take something that make you more kind of tired, you know, because it can happen that we take the wrong herb and they can be a little bit more complex. So that's why consultation, asking a question is going to be a good thing.
If you're just joining us, you're officially in the pharmacy with Dr. Omar, the pharmacist, the proprietor of Welltopia Pharmacy in Mech 1, Thiensville. We're talking about stress. You know, Dr. Omar, I was looking at some of these effective stress management techniques. Let me run down a few and get your input on them. Meditation.
Meditation. Oh, my God. Meditation is wonderful to help support the vagus nerve and help to manage stress. And statistics, studies, every conference that I go to, meditation gets to be part of how to manage stress. And if you do it just regularly, 5 minutes, 10 minutes a day, blood pressure goes down, heartbeat goes down, ability to control your world is better. Some people can do different forms of meditation. Excellent way. It can be as good as a medication that you take. The key to meditation is to do it on a regular basis.
Progressive muscle relaxation.
Oh, my God. I would love that. You know, progressive muscle. Oh, because it's physiological. It helps to release the stress that comes from the muscles, relieve this tension. Yesterday, I had a chiropractor friend that I see every few months. He walked in and told me, can you come to the consultation room? And then he kept on working with me some muscle relaxation techniques that he has. And I was like, how did you know that I'm stressed? And he was like, I don't know. I just woke up and I felt you need me to come and help you with this kind of technique. And he told me, like, I am very spiritual and I feel people and you are a good friend. So I decided to come and help you with that. It just happened very intuitively. And that's the nice thing about the, meditation. Makes you on more connection with stronger powers in the universe.
Deep breathing.
Deep breathing. It changes my life, changes my patients' lives, changes my, I'm trying it with my son because he's anxious and I'm trying to make him call. Try deep breathing before you go to an important meeting and you will see how more control you're going to be reacting. But deep breathing is every day, at least twice a day, and do it through a known easy way that is simple, that is easy to make, like 478 by Andrew Weil, Dr. Andrew Weil, the one that we talked about before. 478, you take a deep breath in 4, hold for 7, breathe out for 8. Wonderful technique.
Let's see, going for a walk.
Going for a walk. This is just relaxing to change the scenery. Helps with any form of depression. I don't consider walking as an exercise. Walking is helping your body, helping your mind, but it's not exercise. It's better than nothing, of course, but don't fool yourself. Walking is good, but exercising is different. It's relaxing. Exercise is stress. So walking is relaxing. Exercise is stress. I want to stress on that.
Phone lines are open at 855-752-4842. Your thoughts, Dr. Omar and I, because you are officially in the pharmacy with Dr. Omar, the pharmacist, on the Earl Ingram Show. We're going to continue this conversation.
The Earl Ingram Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 8 till 10. To learn more about this show, news from the center, WRCE. Earl Ingram.
On the next show, it's Motown Monday, and we'll dive deep into why certain groups voted for Donald Trump and the direction of the future of our nation.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 till 10.
As a network, we're called Civic Media because a big part of it is we want to start modeling how civic discourse really should happen and being respectful of each other's opinions, even if you disagree, you know, like they should be given a platform.
If Rocker and I can get along, right. We can all get along.
I know,
along.
Exactly.
Right,
yeah.
Rocker?
Yeah, that's right, Jimmy.
Well, you do have a wall in between the two of you, so
glass.
It's like
it's only glass.
It's only tear down the walls. Listen to Max Inc. Saturday night, 6 to midnight, across the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us. This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.